Hi, this is Dr. Zanna Beams, and I'm here doing the Rubix Wellness podcast. Rubix Wellness is a program that's a preventive mental health program focused on six areas of wellness. Those are physical, social, emotional, environmental, occupational, and intellectual. And we use these six categories of wellness to evaluate our state of mental health and identify areas that could be contributing to any problems or concerns we have with our state of mental health and wellness, and find targeted solutions to solving those problems and build on strengths in all of those areas. So the podcast is going to investigate those areas of wellness once per month. And today we're going to be focusing on the physical category. Today I'm really excited because my colleague who actually helped me develop this program is going to be talking with us about the physical category. Today we're going to be talking with Kendra Benish, who's a clinical counselor in Howard County and a really gifted clinical counselor in Howard County, someone I really enjoy working with, and someone who's helped a lot of families that I've worked with. And also very excited about this conversation because it's, of course, physical wellness, which means it's my area of specialty. So hopefully I can share some real strategies for helping folks continue to thrive and always improve their state of wellness and health in their physical wellness. Kendra.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here and to be a part of a preventive mental health program. You know, as people come into my office, we tend to be at a point where most of my clients are in crisis. So to be able to work with individuals as we start to feel out of balance is really exciting to me as a mental health therapist. But as we look at physical wellness, I think today with our busy schedules and our busy lives, we tend to overthink exercising and eating healthy, and we push it off to the side. There's too many other things we have to do. But I'm hoping today you can help me help those listening simplify healthy habits in this area. So for example, nutrition. When I think of nutrition, it's like, oh, I have to meal plan and I have to change everything I'm eating. And I don't have time for that. I have two kids. I'm a full-time employee. Help me come up with some facts, because I'm uninformed, and some tips on getting my plate and my diet a little bit healthier.
That's a great way to frame it. And I love that you mentioned that sometimes people come to you in crisis. There's a couple reasons why that is really important to Rubix Wellness. One is I call this a preventive mental health and wellness program because I want to get to folks before they get into crisis.
Right.
So one thing we can do, for example, as families, as educators, as health providers, is use this kind of a structured approach to make sure that folks are thriving before they get into crisis.
Yes.
Secondly, I think it's really important you mentioned that because I really want to recognize that when somebody is in crisis, they may not have the wherewithal or all the personal tools to do the kinds of things we might talk about later in this conversation. And I also want to recognize that sometimes by the time somebody approaches a mental health provider, they're feeling so terrible that it's just all, it's very overwhelming, sort of like
Absolutely.
What you mentioned. So mm-hmm. The reason why I really like this structured categorical approach is that it takes away that sense of being overwhelmed and I don't know what to do. So let's talk a little bit about that. So nutrition is somewhere I really like to start. You mentioned, how do I fix my plate? I love that idea. Because we all grew up with this food pyramid, right? Where it was like, okay, eat a lot of these. Yeah, eat a lot of these, eat a little bit less of these, eat tiny amounts of this.
Right.
Well, the food pyramid is great, but it's been reformulated over the past few years, maybe 5-6 years ago. And now instead of a pyramid, we look at a plate. So mm-hmm. You look at a circle, and actually the CDC came up with something called choosemyplate.gov, which is a website that they run. And it's just those words, choosemyplate.gov. And you can go on there. And when you go on the landing page, what you see is a circle divided into four sections. And those four sections are vegetables, fruits, proteins, and carbohydrates. And the most important thing you can do when you look at that website or look at that plate is zoom out a little bit. When you zoom out a little bit, what becomes very clear is that half the plate is covered in vegetables and fruits. So an easy way to fix your plate, as you said, is when you're putting your plate together, first thing you do, cover half of it in vegetables. From there, everything else you do is going to be icing on the cake you shouldn't necessarily be eating.
Except one time a day, maybe.
Yes, except as treats. I'm teasing. But sure. But if you zoom out and you say half my plate should be covered in vegetables and fruits, or you zoom out even further and you say during the day, half of what I eat should be vegetables and fruits.
I like that. Because when I think of my plate, it's like, oh, I ate vegetables one time today, and am I done?
Right.
But it's half my day.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So, for example, I've implemented a bunch of strategies in addition to what your plate actually looks like or is covered with. But another strategy is I drink what I call a Green Whip every morning. So the Green Whip, I know everybody says that, especially if I talk about kale. I have a daughter, one of my four kids, she'll smell it from across the room and go, oh, you made it with kale today. And I'll say, yes, but I also put strawberries in it, so give it a try. But I have a Green Whip, which is basically about 4 cups of either baby spinach or kale, 2 cups of frozen mango, and whatever else will either go bad fruit-wise or vegetable-wise or that I need to use up. For example, the heels of the cucumber that went into the kids' salads for lunch, or the celery hearts that I don't know I'm not going to use up. I'll throw those in there too. But basically, I just put, it's mostly spinach, a little bit of frozen mango to hold it together and give it a little bit of palatability. And then I drink that before I even leave the house.
And there's half your...
Exactly. Plate. Then I've started. Exactly. I've started my day with already 2/3 vegetables.
And it's on the go for us busy moving all the time. Like, you can take it with you.
And by the way, I make it in a Vitamix, which means I make a whole 1.5 liters. So all 6 of us actually get this serving in the morning. Okay. And that way I not only feel great about having started with vegetables and fruits, I also feel great as a parent. Hey, guess what? I got this into you before you even started your calculus class.
I am a superhero. Yeah. So, okay, half my plate, half my day, fruits and vegetables first. Let's talk about sleep for a second.
Sure, yeah.
You know, a lot of us, the clients that I work with, the people that I work with, we're always tired. We're chronically tired. Help me make better sleep.
That's a great one, because I really think that sleep is an broadly ignored component of health and wellness.
Over-stereotyped.
Yes.
We all need the same amount. Yeah, there's so much. Debunk sleep.
Yeah, totally. So, first of all, we need different kinds of sleep and at different developmental stages. So let's start with babies.
Oh. Babies
and sleep are very difficult for a few reasons. One is that their sleep needs and patterns are incredibly different than a newborn baby's sleep patterns, for example, are very different than even a 9-month-old or an 18-month-old. So I have people asking me day in and day out, literally, why won't my baby sleep? How can I get my baby to sleep better? When am I going to get better sleep? And the answer is, baby's not really supposed to sleep when they're brand new. And I feel like, I'm not saying that to say, oh, well, but I feel like if you know that beforehand or while it's happening.
Knowledge is everything.
Yeah. It's less scary. It's like, okay, there's nothing wrong with my baby. Their sleep cycles are actually only 2 to 3 hours at a time.
Until when-ish?
So when
do we make the next jump, maybe?
Probably after you're 9 to 12 months old.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we shift to different sleep.
And then you shift to toddler sleep, and then you get school-age sleep at about 4 to 5. So toddler sleep, of course, you're often ideally sleeping through the night, maybe getting up earlier in the morning and still needing sleep during the day. And most newborns and toddlers sleep, you know, anywhere between 10 and 14 to 16 hours a day, depending on the person and their needs.
A day meaning 24 hours?
In a 24-hour period, yeah.
Okay.
And the thing about newborns is just that they're not, it's not fair to expect them to sleep more than 2 to 3 hours at a time, because that's not what their physiology tells them.
They can't tell time like we can.
They can't, and they don't have the same needs and as we do as far as sleep, and they don't have the same nutritional needs that we do. Uh-huh. So a newborn baby actually needs to eat every 2 to 3 to 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So one, we'll start by just recognizing that a new baby is just going to have different kinds of sleep. We have to prepare for that with whatever family support and personal support systems we can call upon. Mm-hmm. And we have to be brave and know that it will end one day and we will get sleep and feel normal again.
Because adult sleep is different than newborn, toddler. My sleep changes,
yeah,
too. So yes, as we move through the lifespan, we've got new baby, toddler, little kid. How does that continue to adjust?
So something I'm really passionate about is, first, before we get to adult and parent sleep, is teenage and adolescent mm-hmm. sleep. So I think in the past 5 years or so, the broader community has begun to be much more accepting of the idea that teenagers really don't have the same sleep needs as 10-year-olds or 40-year-olds.
Okay.
In the sense that their hormonal rhythms are wacky and
sure.
also very different than ours. And one thing that their brain is telling them to do is stay up late and sleep in early.
Mm.
So when we get on the backs of our 13, 14, and 17-year-old kids and say, it's 1 p.m. on Sunday and you've been sleeping since, you know, whatever, and you need to get up and clean your room. Mm. They're not supposed to be up before that. They're not supposed to be up at mm-hmm. 6 a.m. on Sunday like I am, getting the closets organized or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Their body is telling them to stay up late and sleep in late. So we as a society are kind of doing our teenagers a bit of an injustice by expecting them to be at school and
mm-hmm.
learning calculus
mm-hmm.
at 7:35 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
and trying to thrive. And so
what is the hour breakdown? I didn't mean to jump on you, but what does the hour breakdown look like for a teenager?
That's exactly where I was going,
okay.
So that's great. So the Academy of Pediatrics actually recommends 7 to 9 hours a night of solid, uninterrupted sleep for teenagers.
Though.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we expect them to go to their basketball practice and then do all their homework and their activities and have some time to breathe and, you know, take a little break, but also be up by 6 to get to school on time, we're placing unfair expectations on them. So 7 to 9 hours a day of mm-hmm. Consecutive hours a day of sleep are really important for adolescents. And our requirements later in life are different. And that's part of what makes it hard for us to remember that, you know, okay, well, while we can go on more like 6 to 8 hours
mm-hmm.
averaging out of sleep as adults, they really can't. And on top of that, while we may want to go to bed earlier and get up earlier for the earlier, not very early, not like me getting up at 5 every day, but we may just have different needs, and it's not necessarily fair to, one, expect teenagers to thrive from a mental health or physical or intellectual perspective, but it's also just not fair to expect them to even be able to fall asleep that early.
So is there a way to bridge the gap? Because we do live in this very structured, rigid society right now with expectations that are outside what a teenager may need.
Yeah.
But what are some ways that we can help them get better sleep within these confinements?
Yeah. So, for example, if a kiddo needs to get up at 6 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
they could go to bed at 10 or 11 and still get a reasonable amount of sleep during the school week.
Mm-hmm.
And what that will require is being disciplined about eating a healthy dinner at a reasonable time,
mm-hmm.
Getting our work done without distractions in an efficient way,
mm-hmm.
and then getting away from screens and other stimulating activities before bedtime.
How long before bedtime? Tell me more about these screen things.
Yeah, so we can talk a lot about screen time and physical health, but as far as it pertains to sleep, I usually recommend that kiddos put away all screens. That means desktop computer, laptop computer, iPad, Kindle, even if it's a Paperwhite, and phone.
And TV.
And TV. At least an hour before bedtime.
Okay.
Now, if you're conscientious, you can still get home at 6 from practice, unwind a little bit, eat a healthy dinner, start your work by 7:30, mm-hmm. do your few hours of homework, and get to bed by 8. Mm. I mean, by 10, sorry, mm-hmm. and get 8 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. Yeah, by 10 and get 8 hours of consecutive sleep.
Okay.
It's possible. You just got to be really conscientious.
What I'm hearing is discipline.
Yeah.
We have to change the habit. We have to do the work.
Discipline, mindfulness. Mm-hmm. I like to, a gentler word, I think, for discipline is being mindful about your time.
Yeah, yeah. I think discipline's important.
Yeah, for sure.
For all of us. I mean, even us adults. I who work in this field as well, go to bed with my cell phone in my hand,
mm-hmm.
which is probably a very poor choice.
Yeah.
So as adults with sleep, is that similar to teens, or how much do we differentiate in terms of bedtime routine?
All of us should be putting our phones and our screens away an hour before bedtime. And sometimes people's eyes get really big when I say this to them because they're like, how am I going to watch Game of Thrones? Or how am I going to check in on the Democratic debates at night or whatever else folks are interested in?
It's my time.
Yeah, do my Facebook check-ins mm-hmm. with my girlfriends or whatever. But frankly, I will tell you that if sleep is a concern or energy levels are a concern, you will likely benefit from following this advice, which is not, it's not coming out of my own little head randomly. This is CDC, Academy of Pediatrics, lots of new mm-hmm. research around sleep. Anyone that is interested in sleep health and mental health will make a similar recommendation.
And screens is a really big one because it's a new access that we have. But there are other things we need to consider in our sleep environment. What are some of those other things that we can tweak to help get better sleep?
In general, I like to think of it as an umbrella guideline of not doing stimulating activities before mm-hmm. sleep time. So, for example, a lot of guidelines will say avoid vigorous cardiovascular exercise right before sleep.
Mm.
Now, that's a tough one because if you're trying to get in 3 hours a week of vigorous exercise and you don't get home until 7, et cetera, et cetera. For some folks, it's better to go ahead and do your half hour on the treadmill mm-hmm. before sleep if that's when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
For some folks, if you notice a pattern of that then getting you amped up and having some trouble, then we're going to have to figure out a different schedule for fitting in that exercise, you know.
Right.
So, but I think in general, it's a good guideline to avoid other stimulating activities as well before bedtime. So if you know you're going to have a difficult conversation, maybe don't do that in the bedroom right before bed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe show some discipline about scheduling a time or putting it off until a weekend morning or something like that. A lot of us have a TV going all night while they're sleeping
mm-hmm.
or live in environments where it's hard to get darkness. Mm-hmm. Darkness is really important for our brain, not just because it's more pleasant to sleep in the darkness, but because your brain needs that signal of darkness in order to recognize that it's time to start making your sleep hormones,
mm-hmm.
slow things down, get into the physiologic rhythms mm-hmm. of falling asleep, staying asleep, and getting healthy brain and physical rest while
you're
asleep.
So there's more than just marketing behind those blackout curtains.
They have really, really changed the way that I sleep, for sure. I was pretty skeptical about them for a while, but it really makes a difference to have a dark environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard to come by a dark environment naturally these days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And when we talked about sleep, you brought up exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look at physical wellness, that's a really big piece to all of this is, you know, even as clinicians, we say if you're feeling down, go get that dopamine running, get those endorphins flowing. It makes a significant impact. But we keep talking and bringing back this thing of time.
Mm-hmm.
So exercise.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to fit exercise into all these other things I have to do, including now my healthy plate, my healthy sleep? How do I make that balance? What can I do?
One thing I would do is schedule it as a non-negotiable as much as possible.
I like that.
So it's non-negotiable that you are going to try to get 3 hours a week. If you're somebody that has a very rigorous weekday schedule because of your work, don't put that demand on yourself. Try to do an hour and a half each day on the weekend, or try to do a really long workout one day on the weekend even. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not going to work for everybody to actually maintain your mental health. For myself, for example, I need a little bit of vigorous physical activity most days in mm-hmm. order to really stay centered mm-hmm. and level. And so I have just put it in as a non-negotiable. And if I have to go for my run with a flashlight attached to my head on my street and literally just run up and down my street after dinner, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. And it's not a big deal. I don't have to train for a marathon all the time. Mm-hmm. 35 minutes up and down my street with a little flashlight and a podcast or whatever. Yeah. You know, and so for me, that's what has to happen. Mm-hmm. For some folks, a 2-hour, 20-mile bike ride is once a week is going to be a really solid, you know, bedrock of their physical exercise routine. And that's what works with their commuter schedule or whatever. So I encourage, I think, remembering that 3 hours is doable if you either break it into little chunks or make it one big chunk when it's available and make it non-negotiable. Even if the kids need something, even mm-hmm. if you've got an extra project, if that's just as non-negotiable as brushing your teeth or eating your dinner, mm-hmm. it's much more likely to happen. Put it on your calendar.
So much of this is the way that we think about things, and we like to overthink mm-hmm. things. When you talk about the exercise and families and work and using the stairs, when you're in your office building, bringing your kids into the workout if you need to, some of those things kind of pulled out to me or jumped into my mind when you were talking about fitting it in and making it non-negotiable. When we talked about sleep, it changes through the lifetime. Does the amount of exercise you need change?
Yeah. So I love that you brought up fitting the kids into your exercise routine and also how expectations change during the lifespan. So believe it or not, for young people, we want about 6 hours a week of vigorous physical exercise.
Hello.
Yeah. So that's almost an hour a day averaged mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. Now, you can get half an hour of it at recess if you are lucky enough to have recess.
And you're moving.
At your school.
For the
and
half
you're
hour.
Moving. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You can certainly get much more than that if you're a competitive athlete or you do karate 3 times a week or whatever. But a lot of kiddos, when I say that, they're the whole family, their eyebrows just go up. The parents are like, an hour a day? And the kids are like, an hour a day? And I'm like, you can make it happen.
Sure.
And the reason I really liked you mentioning that it's a great idea to consider fitting the kids into your own exercise routine is so many parents feel like they don't get to spend time with their kids
right.
Or that they don't do fun activities with their kids. Well, guess what? You could play tag or hide and seek with your kid for half an hour. That way you did something fun with them, mm-hmm. they got to be with you, mm-hmm. and you all got exercise. Mm-hmm. So fitting it in is a great way of looking at it and combining those goals, you know.
And if you've never worked out with a 5-year-old, I highly recommend it. It's absolutely hilarious. Ask me how I know. But right, you know, it brings joy into yes. this thing that can be looked at as like, oh, I have to exercise.
Yeah. Vigorous exercise for half an hour could be a dance party with your 5-year-old.
Right.
It could
That's
be.
That's exhausting.
Yes, exactly. Could be tag with your 7-year-old, which is even more exhausting.
Sure.
It could be your, using your baby as your weights when you're doing your bench presses. So you lay on the ground and you put, you know, lift your baby up and down and the baby loves it and you love it. And yeah. Everybody gets, you know, they get their exercise. And being creative about fitting that time mm-hmm. in, talking with your girlfriends about ideas.
Girlfriend, accountability. You know, I'm hearing discipline, which is super important, how we're looking at things, stop overthinking, start doing. But accountability partners for a lot of this stuff. Why do we think we have to do everything alone?
Right, we don't. And actually, one of the components of Rubik's that we both found were the most surprisingly helpful or unpredictedly helpful was the togetherness aspect of it. Both times that we did it in groups, we really found that a huge part of the benefit was simply being together with other people and talking about productive ideas.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Having a workout partner, having somebody that you text about, hey, I did my, you know, whatever, 3,000 steps in the woods this morning, mm-hmm. Having a dog that you have to take for a walk twice a day.
Or someone else's dog
right. if you don't need a dog in your household, absolutely. I'm sure that everybody has a neighbor that would love for anyone to offer to take their dog out or come and play ball with their dog. So accountability in that sense is really important, whether it's to friends, family, other dependents in the form of
co-workers,
exactly, non-human members of your family.
So, I mean, throughout our conversation, I'm hearing, more fruits and vegetables. Half hour a day maybe of working out or make my sleep environment make sense for, like, I feel less overwhelmed. That is not really hard to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I really like how you said half hour a day, very specific approaches. So what I really like about this approach, and maybe this is very much about my own personality, but I really like the idea of going from, oh man, I really need to eat better. Oh, gosh, I really need to exercise more. Oh, I really should get better sleep. Going from I should eat more, I should exercise more often, I should sleep better, to I should eat 3 servings of vegetables before lunch, or I should have my Green Whip every morning. Mm-hmm. That makes it less overwhelming, mm-hmm. and even easier. It puts a box around the problem, mm-hmm. so that you're like, oh, okay, yeah, it's not I need to do better, it's I need to drink my Green Whip.
Mm-hmm. Or even moving from the passive language to the active.
Yeah.
I don't need to, I want to.
Yes.
It's not a should, I am doing
it. I plan to, mm-hmm. I will, yes.
I'm capable.
Yes. And then the other thing I really like about you bringing it back into taking out the overwhelmingness is, you don't have, if you're feeling like, oh man, I'm not in a really good place, I'm going to start by working on my physical wellness because that seems like the clearest way to approach this. You don't have to work on nutrition, sleep, exercise, screen time, and getting a checkup with your doctor all at once.
I don't have to do everything all at one time. I don't understand.
You can go in there in your wellness wheel, which we've put together, and you can say, oh, okay, like somewhere that I could really quickly make an improvement is I'm not eating vegetables but once a week maybe.
Right.
Let's aim for 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we don't have to get to half of everything I eat is vegetables. Mm-hmm. Maybe we just get to, I eat broccoli on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, we're so cavalier in thinking we have to fix everything all at once.
Yeah.
And you start somewhere.
Yeah.
Because that small start affects everything.
Yep.
As someone who recently just started working out again after having my second child, now that I'm working out, I'm naturally looking at my food differently. I am more exhausted because I am putting more physical, it all comes together.
Right. You sleep better. Exactly. So I think that's absolutely right. I think taking out the sense of this cloud of I want to feel better and I need to do better.
All at the same time.
Exactly. Breaking it down into pie pieces that are manageable and then breaking those pie pieces into small problem-solving strategies that feel manageable is exactly what this whole preventive mental health approach is about. And it's been a real pleasure working on putting it together with you. You've been a real, real source of inspiration and expertise in putting this program together.
It's super exciting to me. And I just think being able to look at life in that lens makes it so much more doable and enjoyable. So thank you for having me for this time and this conversation.
Yeah.
I look forward to what's next.
Yeah, I'm hoping that this conversation has been really helpful for everyone listening to the Rubik's Wellness podcast. And if anyone ever has any questions, they can find me at drbeams.com. And there are also Facebook pages for Rubik's Wellness. If you look that up, you'll find lots of tips and all kinds of fun engagement about all of these categories. Till next time. Thank you so much for listening to the Rubik's Mental Health and Wellness Podcast. We'll return next month for more strategic conversation about how to live our most meaningful and fulfilling lives.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.